Well, welcome everybody. Everybody doing okay? What's on your mind today before we get started?
Been a little busy, but all good.
Okay. What questions do you have on the homework?
I think we're still kind of struggling to, not struggling, but it's tough to kind of sort through everything. Plus there's some implications to certain different strategies for how to reassign and or split things that we have to get more detail on, but
okay.
Just a lot of people.
So let's start with your absolute minimum and your target minimum. What are those numbers?
Can you hear? Can you talk?
Get
there you go.
That okay, was there we are.
We had a buzzing in the back. So everybody should be muted except for the person that's going to talk, okay?
Oh, good point. Now I just hit spacebar.
You guys went through the PAR program this week?
The videos?
Touchstone, did you do the PAR program with Touchstone? No.
That one's scheduled for tomorrow, but we've got it on the calendar.
Okay, great. Hey, Mary.
Hi, how are you guys? Another day in the brig.
So who's answering that question? Kyle?
So we put the target at 2 million. Minimum's 500, but only if they're going to go into a firm discretionary UMA platform or if they've got significant potential in the near future.
So give me the math. How many counts? How many relationships, households?
So if we cut out the 250s and below, it drops the households from about 260 to 160,
okay,
which divided by two of us is 80 with the idea of 100 each, but we can help each other out as a whole.
Sure. But, and then your revenues were how much?
For all holds, 1.828. And
so 1.828 divided by 160 equals 1,000,000. Looks like it's closer to 1,000,000 to me.
So 1,828 divided by 160 clients is about 11,500 in revenue.
Right. So your minimum would be, let's say at the low end, 10,000, and then 1,000,000. 1,000,000 or 10,000 would be your absolute minimum, or you're going to be bringing in clients less than your average, which wouldn't make any economic sense.
Yeah, so one, this is Keith. One question on your calculation of average that we have is we have one outlier client that kind of skews the average, kind of like your fat tails.
Sure.
So
get rid of him then.
I'm thinking knock him out and use the rest for averages.
Sure. What does he give you?
He produces $256,000 in revenue, roughly.
So you're still at $1 million.
What's your math? I mean, how are you coming up with this?
Isn't that right?
I'm just asking, what's your method? You like?
Well, if you took, let's say, take 250 out of 800, and that gives you 1.6, or let's say 1.6, right? And divided by 1.6 is $1 million, is 10,000.
Wait, Rob, when you say 800,
I'm ballparking it, but if you took 256 away from 1,828, you're still at more than you're at about 1.6, right, or close to it, 1.58 or something. Divided by 160 households is about 10,000 total. I'm not that far off.
So what you're saying is minimum is either the amount of revenue of 10,000 per household or
If you're getting
$1 million,
right? If you're getting 1%, which is the ideal thing, right? Sometimes you get more, sometimes you get less. But just we use that kind of as an average, then you're at about $1 million and you're at about 10,000, taking out the big account. Right?
Okay.
Yeah, it came out to 9826.
I'm sorry, you're cutting out, Kyle. What was the number?
Without that number, it brings it from like 11,000 and change in revenue down to 9,826.
I was pretty close.
I had another question too.
Sure.
So, I mean, we've got upper level households in size that have lower, revenue production. Just maybe they sit on stock, so they just buy and hold and they're not selling stuff yet. And then there's smaller accounts with really high revenue production closer to some of the much bigger households. How do you?
Well, one of the things we do in terms of determining a client's value isn't just their production or their assets. George Kemp used 11 different screens that he put them through, and he came out with 33 clients that got through all 11 screens. But the ones that are the most important screens to use are that you like the clients, that they refer business to you, that they're profitable. If you have a client that takes enormous amounts of time and trades all the time, that may not be a profitable client, even though he gives you a lot of business. So we look at things like that as much as we look at the total revenues and the assets. You could have a big asset number and no revenues, or you could have a big revenue number and no assets. So those are not clients that we want. We don't want to have either of those. We want a client that is reasonable, gets about 1%, and grows, right? Client grows. And so that's another thing we look at. Is a client going to grow, or is this a $1 million rollover that's never going to bring in another cent? That would meet our absolute minimum, but it wouldn't meet our target minimum. So your target minimum, take out the big guy, the average of the top 20% of your client. Why do we want to know the target minimum? The answer is because that's who we want to go after. We want more of those clients. Yes, we'll take $1 million client, but that's not what we're after. We're after $3 million clients. My guess is that your target minimum is $3 million or $2.5 million because it's a lesser number. It's probably going to be closer to $3 million.
We put our target at 2.
What's the math on it? Take the top 20% of your clients, take the average of them. So it's 160 clients, the top 20% would be 30 clients, 32 clients. What are the average of those 32 clients give you? I bet you're closer to 2.5 or 3 million. The only reason I'm pushing you guys is because everybody wants to go to the lower numbers because it's easier. But if you had a magic wand and every time you ask for a client, you could get them, you certainly wouldn't go for the lower numbers.
Gotcha.
And the magic of goal setting and focusing is that you will get what you go after. And you'll be shocked when you go after something and you set a number, you actually will get it. I know you know that already. Sometimes we forget it. I mean, goal setting got us to where we are now. Sometimes we forget the power of goal setting and focusing. This is kind of like your handicap in golf. Everybody wants a high handicap when they're playing for money, and they want a low handicap when everybody looks at it in the book and they go, wow, he's an 8. That's good. Or he's a 4. But when you're playing, you want a high handicap. So for marketing purposes, you want a low handicap. In this case, you want a high minimum because your brand is determined by your market's perception of your value. And if you charge more, quote, you must be worth more. Because people wouldn't pay it and you wouldn't ask that amount if you weren't worth it. Or if other people didn't pay you that. So we're going to give a lot more to these clients. So we want them to pay for it. Let's talk a little bit about the, Kyle, you're still working on that, right?
Yeah, it's just a lot of screens. It's all over the map. I mean, I've sorted them in asset size, and the next column is last year's revenue. T12 is just kind of is there, and then I have ROA, but then I also put deposits and withdrawals because some of these people are, you know, not taking out and putting stuff in, which – depending on the person may or may not matter, but I know some that we definitely don't want either of us to deal with.
Right.
Problem children.
So one of the things that I'd like you to do is give that top 20%, really give me that number, whatever that is. And I want it to be a math number, not an emotional number. Okay. So the top average of your top 20%, excluding the biggest client, divided by 32 clients, which is the number you said, that'd be 20% of your practice. The top 20% would be 32. So what would be the mean or the average of those 32 clients? And my guess is it's closer to 3 million than it is 2. Okay, but I'd like you to give me that number. If you can give it now, good. If not, give me it to next week, okay? Good. Good.
But just in the
yeah,
top
50. I'm trying to
50,
get it right now.
If you look just at the PAR data, and this is as of 7/08 of 20, but the top 50% is 31 households, which represents the top 13% of all of your clients. So that includes your outlier, but the average AUM there is 5.6 million. So Rob's correct. It's higher than you think.
Thanks, Mary. Okay, so you guys do the math yourself because I want you to own that number, but I want it to be a number that is real for you. And that's what, when you prospect, that's where you want to be prospecting. You want to be prospecting in that market. So when you go fishing, you fish. I was telling the story earlier. When I go to Idaho to fish, I can make a choice. I'm going to spend the day catching a lot of fish, or I'm going to catch a few big ones. And last year I went out and 3 days early and I went after big ones. So I had my own guide and we spent the day and I caught about three fish, but they're all big, really big. And that was what I liked. That was why, I could have caught 30 fish, but I didn't want to catch 30 fish. I wanted to catch three big ones. So I've got a team in Indianapolis where the younger guy is bringing in a lot of business, but it's smaller business. It's $1 million minimums. And he might bring in five clients of $1 million each. And his partner brings in one client of $15 million. Okay. And so both take about the same amount of time and effort, but this one is worth three times what the other one is worth in terms of the size. So this guy's fishing in a pond of 10 million and above, and this guy's fishing in a pond of 1 million and above. So you'll get whatever you go after. That's the point of the marketing effort. So when we focus and we develop our marketing plan, we want to know what we're going after. And so if it's 2 million, it's different than 3 million. Okay, it doesn't mean that we won't take a $2 million client, but it's where we're going after. Some people have a $5 million minimum. Some people have a $10 million minimum. It's just where are they and who are they? They're different. Do you know that the produce manager in a Publix will retire with $1 million. Isn't that amazing? I found that out. Staggering. Shocking. So anyway. Okay, so.
Oh, I did the math, Rob. Without the larger client, it's probably 33 or 34 clients. I can't be exact. I had to do it manually, but. Is 1.743 and divided by 33 clients, that was an average of 5.283 million.
It was 5.284,
I'm sorry.
Now, is there another really big client in there, or is this the real number?
Including the big client, the top five households start at lowest is 15 and it just goes up to 18.
So you got big accounts. So my thing is,
but the second biggest client is almost all cash. He's a business that was grandfathered to us from FA who left.
So you might want, but we're really talking about revenues, which is fine. So you guys decide, but it shouldn't be 2 million, right? And it could be six, but it probably the math says it should be five.
Larger.
Yeah, the math says it should be five as your target minimum. And you've proven that you can get those clients. So, you guys decide, but it shouldn't be 2. It probably shouldn't be 3. It probably should be 4 or 5. 5's a nice number. It's a good round number. People can remember it. And it changes everything about the way you prospect. But you guys have got to decide if that's your market or not. You've proven you can get them. You can prove you keep them.
Yeah.
So the question is that what you want?
I guess my thinking is, like you say, we get them. I've grown them and managed them into that level, but I don't know that I go out stalking them and bring them in at that level. So that's
a different way of thinking, isn't it? Yeah, it's cool. But you remember the guys that they're the same guys that you brought in with 3 million and now they're fit 10 million. Same people. They just are grown up now. So you're used to that and you're comfortable with that. It's just a $3 million client that's grown up. So it's the same guy. And so it's not like, you gotta get a different personality to get these guys or to keep these guys. They like you and they still like you.
I'm just looking at this here and I didn't think about this earlier, but 2.2 plus 3 million is 5.2 million are the top 3 households, and I'd call them all outliers in terms of just the dynamics of them. One is the big producer in revenue. The other two are just large accounts with very low revenue.
Yeah, they wouldn't show up. They wouldn't affect our revenue number here, though. Because we're used a revenue number. We didn't use an asset number, right? Or maybe you did use an asset number. Try it on a revenue basis. See what that number looks like. Okay.
So with the big outlier, it was in the top 34 people revenue down to 750,000 minus another 40 million. So basically 300,000. So I'd bring about a 1.1 down to about a 700,000 or 800,000 if we don't include those. And it's not like they don't produce revenue, but they are skewed in terms of revenue.
So does that do anything to the top, to the 5 million? I just would like you guys to get to a number you own rather than one that I interpolate or
so if I take all three of those out, it brings the revenue divided by 160 to 4,600.
Okay. So I'm still good with, let's say, 4 million, right? 1 million and 4 million. That's not unusual, by the way. Usually it's 3, but 4 is fine. That means you're used to dealing with bigger clients, which is great. So let's make it, are you guys okay with making it 1 million and 4 million?
What you're saying is 1 million is our
target
minimum we'll accept, but 4 million is our, as you talked about last week, in the community, our
right.
Size we're going after.
Right. And if you for marketing reasons you think 5 million has a better ring to it, it's fine. But that's That's what you, that's who you're declaring you are in the market. We had a company come into our market in the 90s that had a $5 million minimum. And they made a big splash. It shook up the market quite a bit. They gathered a lot of assets because of that, because people thought they had more value. So I've seen it work. And they had it right in the front page of their brochure, right on the front page of their website. So anyway, okay. So things we need to cover: segmentation. Where do the clients go? I get you guys will work that out. Who goes? You know, who are the clients that you're going to reassign in order to get down to? You don't have a big number here. 80 clients is fine. Get rid of, you know, reassign. But use this time to reassign small clients. Don't just keep them because they, you know, it's easier to not clean out the closet. Go in and really do a good job of cleaning out the closet. If you don't wear the clothes, get rid of them. So if somebody isn't paying you, get rid of them. They may have $5 million with you, but you have no control and they don't pay you. So this is the fill or kill time. This is the time to go in and say, hey, we love you, but you know, we're charging $10,000 as our minimum fee and we hope you're happy with that. And they're like, we don't pay anything now. And we go, that's right. And they go, what do you mean? Well, this is what we're going to do for you. Each and every one of our clients is going to get multi-generational planning, full implementation of that planning process through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews, 2 of them in person, and rapid response to your problems, 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. How does that sound? And they're like, wow, that sounds great, but I don't know. They say, well, we'd love to have you keep you, but we're keeping less than 100 clients each, and our minimum fee is $10,000. We'd be happy to find you someone that is better suited for you. And they're like, great, okay. Or what does this mean? And what happens is you find out whether you have a customer or you have a client. And we want all clients that respect us, value us, and pay us. So you reassign the smaller clients that can't afford this concierge experience, and you reassign the clients that aren't willing to pay for it. So you kind of build the practice that you'd always wanted, and you've earned it, you deserve it, and this is what you're doing. Doctors do it all the time now. The average doctor has between 2 and 8,000 patients, and they make a decision to have 100 or 200 patients, and they charge them each $5,000 or $10,000, and the patients are willing to pay for it. If they're not, they don't. You know, they're goodbye. But instead of clients, you know, it's a terrible experience for the doctors. They're always going crazy. And it's a really bad experience for the patients because they're waiting an hour and a half for a physical instead of being taken by appointment. So that's what you're doing. You're creating a concierge experience for yourself. Next week, what I want you to do is focus in on your ideal day. So we're creating our ideal practice in terms of our ideal number of clients, the ideal clients that we want to work with, the ideal prospects. But first we build our ideal day. So when do you want to prospect? When do you want to call clients? When do you want your office hours? When do you want to do surgery? So the idea is you build your day and you tell them within a reasonable amount of time when the appointments are going to be. If you want to call clients for 3 days and have 2 days to prospect, you jam them into 3 days. If you want to take Fridays off, and play golf, then you work for 4 days really hard and prospect and so forth in those 4 days. But you decide now what your schedule is going to be and then fit these clients into your schedule. And the scheduler will adapt to what you want. And that's when you also decide, when do I want to take my vacations? There are four times a year, we have 5 week months. So you're going to use those to prospect. You're going to use them to take vacations. What are you going to do? So you work with your team and you work out your schedules for the day, week, month, and year. And so you do that now. So this is the beginning of getting organized. The third week, we go into the roles and responsibilities of the team members. So we really have to hump here in terms of getting this stuff done. You guys are a little bit behind in terms of knowing your numbers. Okay, so let's not spend the next week trying to figure out what our numbers are and where are we going to be. Instead, let's spend a lot of time asking questions about process and where accounts are going to go and what's the pitch I should use. What's my speech I'm going to give? This is much better than, you know, how many clients are we going to reassign? Get that stuff done. Know who you want to reassign, where it's going to go, and begin that process. You also should be beginning talking to your clients about who you're going, you know, what are they receiving now? That 1242 rapid response to their problem in the financial plan. So you should begin contacting your client and sharing with them the good news. Okay.
We're just looking at the numbers here, Rob. I'm going through T12 revenue and looking for stuff under 5, and I don't see any until I get at 25 a page. I don't see any until I get to roughly the 125th household range. And on that page, from 100 to 125, almost all of these clients, three of them are existing clients. The rest are new clients. So the T12 is only less than a year, but it's on track to hit 5. And then the next page is kind of half and half. So the first 150, there's not too many. And with the idea of 160, I guess in a roundabout way, what I'm trying to say is,
think the 160 is a good number.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm just basing it off that number. I'm getting to about 150 with not that many under 5,000. And okay. Some of them shouldn't even be separate households. It's just Morgan Stanley doesn't let us household a business with an account with a household that has an IRA in it. So it's the right. Same client as it's a duplicate household.
So you're really down to 150, which is better than 160 for these purposes.
So if you got rid of 83 households, that would get you to 149, and that accounts for the bottom 4% of your practice in terms of revenue. So you're basically, by replacing, 2 new clients who fit the top 50% of your clients would exceed all of that bottom 4%. So you could really pare those out, replace with 2 who fit that top bucket, and you would be net neutral in revenue.
And 82 less people take
care of. They aggravate you. Right. Take your time. Your team's time, Ebony's time, everybody's time.
And just so you know, the average revenue for that group is 80,000. I'm sorry, the average assets is 80,000. The average revenue, average assets 80,000. The average revenue is $581.
A year, not an hour.
Correct.
You're probably working at $500 or $500 an hour of your cost. Anyway.
And quite frankly, what amount of that is even going to your pocket based on Morgan Stanley's pay grid?
Right. So this is a great opportunity to, look, this is not unusual and it happens and it's, you guys are clean. You're really good. I mean, this is minor cleanup compared to what I normally see. So congratulations.
Can I make one other comment?
Sure, Mary.
Okay. So sometimes what we also find is it's not just sort of to your point, it's not just the revenue for each one of those clients and the time spent, you know, servicing them. It's also taking a look at the investments that sit in the portfolio, because what we generally find is those clients who fall in the bottom 4% also tend to have the most number of orphan funds, which is one product owned by one client in one account. And so the opportunity cost and the risk associated with having those clients is even greater than having a lower than average revenue, if that makes sense. There's sort of a dual issue that occurs with those people.
Rob, I'm curious your thoughts on lower revenue clients that are still somewhat sizable, but they literally just are the easiest people in the world. They call you once a year and that's it.
They're customers. Turn them into clients. I mean, really, you guys have value. They don't see it. They're not, you know, if we go through and analyze them, Kyle, I'm going to ask you, do they have a financial plan? You're going to say no. Do they have, are they paying a fee? Are they using one of your fee-based platforms? No. You know, so they're great, but they're not paying you. Okay. So sell them.
They typically ask them to assets and
I'm sorry.
Manually plugging it in. It takes months to build a plan.
So you're breaking up a little
bit. I was just saying I have a.
Uh-oh. You're still breaking up. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, this is normal. I mean, I remember, you know, clients $5 million and paying us nothing. You know, we hold his municipal bonds and he never buys anything and we're doing it all for him. And he sees us as, he's a customer, you know, he sees us as a croupier. Either, you know, he's going to buy his municipal bonds and he doesn't value us. One CEO had a great relationship with somebody else and used us to keep some small accounts. And it was a fill or kill. You meet with him, tell him what you do, what your value is, and then ask for the order, because you don't have a client. You have a customer. So we'll spend time on that as we go along, converting clients to customers. But here, when it's pretty obvious, you just have to, and I would, I'd have dinner with them or lunch with them, or, you know, in the COVID world, you can't, but I'd have a serious conversation with them or her and try and pitch them, sell them. It's like a prospect. You really don't have a client, you got a prospect. If they're not a prospect, then move on and don't make yourself crazy. Okay. So one of the things we'd like you to do is go through that top, 30 clients that represent 20% of your practice and figure out where they came from. What are they? This is the acquisition piece. Remember we do a segmentation piece, we do an organization piece, and then we do an acquisition piece. The acquisition piece is understanding what your niches are, your natural niche and your target niche. A target niche is one that you'd like to have. These are multimillionaires that all work for Amazon Well, that would be nice, but what are your, in your market, what is that target? And then what's your natural niche? Natural niche would be clients that came from previous practice, previous business. They just are, they come to you naturally. It's an easy business for you. And so we'd like to, and so when you go through them, identify where did they come from? Do they represent a niche? What do they have in common? Were they all people that I got from playing golf with them, or did, you know, my previous employer, or was it reassignments from a former FA, and where did he get them from? The idea is that with that knowledge, we can build on those niches and help you to grow and do more of that business versus just not knowing. When I ask all the time, a lot of people, what are your niches? They don't know. They just kind of get introductions from their existing clients. Well, that's great, except when we want to grow. When we want to grow, we got to accelerate everything. So we take our natural process and we speed it up and make it all happen in a much shorter period of time. So does that make sense? Keith, are you still there? Kyle, are you there?
Still here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're sharing Wi-Fi here. It's kind of messing us, our speak up, but I can hear you fine.
Okay. All right, good. So the homework is create your ideal day and then identify your natural niches and your target niches by doing a little forensic on the top 30 clients. Where did they come from? Questions? No? Good. Good. Everybody good? Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Hope your Wi-Fi gets better.
Thank you.
Right. Bye.
Bye.